Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to talk about MSU's upcoming game in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. MSU is the 8th seed and will take on Minnesota in their home city of Minneapolis in the first game on Thursday. The team split the series this season with both winning on their home floors. MSU dispatched a Gopher team semi-comfortably at home without star player Elijah Hawkins, while the Gophers punched back a few weeks later and overcame a second half deficit after Tyson Walker went down with a groin injury. So this is the rubber match, and we all know what MSU is. So let's talk about Minnesota and how they measure up now that the regular season is done. Minnesota finished the season 18-13, 9-11 in the Big Ten, 75 on KenPom overall, 57th on offense, 117th on defense. So offensively, they shoot pretty well from the floor, both from threes and twos, but very bad turnover team. They're sub-200 in turnover percentage and outside the top 100 in offensive rebounds, although we know that doesn't mean a ton with Michigan State. Free throw attempts to field goal attempts, also sub-70% when they do get there. And they don't, like I said, they don't get to the line very often. Defense, they're 309th against the threes. They're 78th against twos because they get a lot of blocks. They're 72nd block percentage. They don't turn people over a lot. They're sub-250. They're also 180th in defensive rebounding percentage. So overall, just not a great rebounding team. They're 14th in threes attempted. So they've done a good job of preventing people from shooting threes. And like most teams in the Big Ten, they are a slow team at about a 247th in speed of offensive possession length. So a team that's not a whole lot different than when Michigan State played. I think they'll be full strength. I don't think there's anyone injured at this time that I'm aware of.
No.
So we'll see the full complement. But, you know, we saw the full complement in Minneapolis, and it wasn't a lot different for Michigan State, except they just kind of fell apart in the second half when Tyson went down the injury, and they just, you know.
That was it. They had that run, and that they went. I don't want to.
Sounds kind of like Indiana, right? Yeah.
I don't want to dredge up point guard, but yeah, they got very stagnant when Tyson sat out for a few minutes. And then down the stretch, Minnesota just hit some big shots. You know, Dawson Garcia hit a big three, and if I recall correctly, and, you know, that was kind of it. But, yeah, you know, not a good defensive team. You know, 117 on defense, that's not good, but offensively they're slightly better than Michigan State now. I mean, Michigan State's offensive rating has just plummeted over the last several games. So Minnesota is slightly better at number 57. And it's driven by the fact that they shoot reasonably well. There are flaws here, though. This is not a good free throw shooting team, either in terms of getting there or converting when they do get there. They're not a great rebounding team. They're outside the top 100 in offensive rebounding. And they really struggle with turnovers. Basically, everybody except the point guard is a problem.
Yeah,
they're sub-200 in turnover percentage. So this is a team that will cough the ball up. And that's something that, obviously, Michigan State, we'll talk about this in more detail as we go, needs to exploit. On the defensive end, you know, they're solid against twos, as you talked about, but that's really about it in terms of strengths, except that they do manage to limit three-point attempts. But, man, when people get threes off, they hit them, which means they're getting good quality looks. They don't turn anybody over. They're a bad defensive rebounding team. So there are a lot of holes defensively, obviously, but the one thing they do well is defend inside the arc in the lane. They're pretty good there. And that's in part, not entirely, but in part because Pate and Garcia both give them some rim protection.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely, their interior two are really good. And they have kind of what Michigan State lacks. I mean, Michigan State certainly has a good quality four, but it's the five that there's a big difference there. In that paint is, I think, a lot better than the Michigan State centers. All right, so, you know, looking down the stretch, Minnesota, well, I think just globally, Minnesota has played a lot better this year. I mean, this is kind of the team we expected last year, I think, a little bit, although, you know, they had a lot more transfers and stuff. But that sort of effort and the coaching, I think, you know, we're starting to see Ben Johnson sort of look pretty good. And so you now look at this trajectory and you think, well, Minnesota's going to be a tough team next year. I don't know where they're going to be, but I mean, I think they lose Garcia this year.
No.
Oh, they don't.
Here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing. They can bring everybody back. Now, we're in 2024, so you don't know. I would be very surprised to see Garcia go elsewhere because he's been so well traveled. This is his third school, and Minnesota is his home. So you would think that he'll be back. The other guys, you don't know, but I would say on the surface there's a reasonable chance that they bring everybody back from the starting lineup, at least. I think Parker Fox may be done in their rotation. But, you know, it's really encouraging if you're a Minnesota fan. Now, you know, there's another couple of steps to go here, which is he's got to start recruiting well. And, you know, he also needs to continue to get it right in the portal. You know, his first year, he was in such a tough spot and still managed to carve out a team that was very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, what looked like maybe on paper would be a pretty good team because they had a key guy back in Battle. They added Garcia to that team, a McDonald's All-American. But the problem was he didn't get it right with the guards. This year, he got it right. Two portal additions, both of whom have been very solid, and then a high school player in Cam Christie that frankly has outdone all projections. He was not nearly as highly regarded as Max, and he has come in and given them exactly what they needed. This is a team that last year really, really, really struggled to shoot the ball. Really struggled.
Yeah.
And this year, they're pretty good from three. And a big part of that is Cam Christie. And the other two guys as well. The other two guards have shot it. So it's worked out well. And then, you know, you've got a nice mix. You've got three portal guys in that starting lineup and then two guys that Johnson recruited out of high school, Cam Christie and Pharrell Payne.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably something of the mix he needs to have. But yeah, if they bring everybody back from a team that was 9-11, there's going to be reason for optimism heading into next season. Now, what happens with all that is, you know, anybody's guess, but it definitely feels like there's reason for their fans to think that maybe next year could be a tournament level team.
Yeah, it's certainly not unreasonable after what they did this year.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go through run through the lineups then, brought to you by the Brothers Jester Gutters, sponsoring the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter. Obviously, gutters are super important if you're in the state of Michigan, whether it's your business or your home. Water is supposed to stay off your roof and away from your foundation, because if it gets in, it can cause all kinds of problems. There's actually a ice cream parlor just down the street from us that had all kinds of problems with water, got in their basement. And that's where they stored all their birthday supplies, which wasn't that big a deal, except all their birthday supplies were a lot of confetti. And so they had, you can imagine, flooding with confetti. It was a complete disaster in their basement. So you want to make sure you don't have those sorts of problems. So make sure you contact the Brothers Jester Gutters. They can clean out your gutters. They can repair them. They can replace them. Very competitive rates. They go work out in any weather. They'll come out right now and to take care of stuff. Big jobs, small jobs, whatever it might be. You can head on over to thebrothersgutters.com or just go to our support page where you can get a link to the east side or the west side of the state, the Grand Rapids or the Metro Detroit area, and you can get that at thefinalforce on theschedule.com/support 10% off if you mention Final Four when you get in your estimate. All right, so beginning with the starters, Elijah Hawkins, who I mentioned before, Michigan State did not play the first time, but did the second time they met. 6 foot point guard, 9.4 points a game, 7.5 assists a game, 39, 36, 78 shooting, so 3-1 assist to turnover ratio, and he was really good and very dynamic guard.
Yeah, he's a nice player. I would say he missed the first game, and they clearly felt that.
Yeah,
but I would say he a difference maker for sure. Without him, it was noticeable how much they struggled. With him, they still can struggle, as we said. With him, they're still a sub 200 team.
Yeah.
Turnover percentage, but he's not a problem. He's been very good. I mean, 7.5 assists per game is a crazy good number. So that's, you know, definitely a strength. Not a huge scorer, but you know, reliable enough when they need to ask him to try to put points on the board. You know, 36% from three, that's okay. So he's a threat. But really, primarily his value is as a playmaker.
And the shooting guard, Mike Mitchell, 6'3", 10.5 points a game on 42, 39, 81. And I think you pointed out last time, a real streaky guy. So he's going to hit four in a row and then miss four in a row.
He is, but dangerous. And again, a big part, that 39% from three, 10.5 points per game, a lot of it coming from three. That's where his value's been, plain and simple. That was the kind of thing that Minnesota just did not have nearly enough of last season. So a good addition from them. And, you know, again, it's one of these things he came from. I'm struggling to remember whether it was Pepperdine or Pacific. It was somewhere on the West Coast, a mid-major from the West Coast. And you just never know how those are going to pan out.
Right.
He and Hawkins have really, really been nice additions for them.
So then at the playing three in the wing, Cam Christie, 6'6 freshman, 11.3 points a game on 41, 40, and 80 shooting.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you, so obviously younger brother for Max Christie, used to be on Michigan State, for played a year for Michigan State. Would you say he's having a better year than Max Christie did? Or, I mean, I guess I don't know, defensively he's probably not as solid as Max, but boy, from offensive standpoint, he's certainly better.
So there's two things here. Max Christie is a better athlete,
mm-hmm.
and in part because of that, a better defensive player. I'm not sure that Cam is yet on NBA radars. Maybe he'll get there, but right now Cam is primarily, his value comes as a shooter,
right,
and a deep shooter. That said, that was also supposed to be a strength of Max's, and Max never really got it dialed in from three for Michigan State. Cam has. And so in terms of production, yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, I think Max was a double-digit scorer.
Yeah, I think
this freshman year. I guess I don't remember, but it couldn't have been much more than the 11.3 that Cam has added. So, yeah, the fact that there's even an argument about it is a big surprise, because Cam Christie was well outside the top 100 as a recruit in, you know, consensus rating services. So typically those are guys that at the Big Ten level, you do not expect to be starters as freshmen for sure, or necessarily even major contributors. And he has been both of those things. So credit to him, credit to Ben Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, certainly Max did not shoot 40% from three. I don't. He was in the 30s somewhere.
No, he was
so,
in low 30s.
Yeah,
low
exactly.
30s.
All right. So then, four-man Dawson Garcia, 6'11", 17.7 points a game, 6.7 rebounds a game, shooting 48, 32, and 82, 1 point blocks a game, and he had a decent game against Michigan State in East Lansing, but he wasn't dominant like we had concerned that he might be. So they did a pretty good job bottling him up then. And I don't remember what he did in Minneapolis, but I don't feel like he was, again,
he hit some big shots.
Like
he hit
late,
some
didn't
big
he?
Shots. Yeah. Late. Yeah. Yeah. Look, he's their best player. I mean, there's no two ways about that. He's a very difficult matchup because he's 6'11", but he can put the ball on the floor, so he can face you up. take you to the rim. His shooting has gotten better. At the time Michigan State played them in the second game, the one they lost, I believe he was still in like maybe the mid-20s from three. He's up to 32% on the year, so he's gotten up just about to the level that you would say, well, it's not a negative. And if you remember, we had Coach Mike Garland on with us. He talked about how the reason Dawson Garcia was rated where he was, which was very, very highly as a high school player, is a guy at his size with his ball skills, and he just had a red-hot spring playing AAU, shooting the ball. And he had never quite gotten back to that in college. But I think lately he's been much better. And so, yeah, he's a weapon and a tough cover.
And then finally rounding up the starting five is Farrell Payne, 6'10" sophomore, 9.7 points a game, 6.1 rebounds a game, 1.5 blocks, and shooting 61, 0, and 44.
Yeah, the 0 is 0-for-1, so that was probably a hand grenade situation. But
right.
Look, he's a nice building block. You know, only a sophomore. I think, assuming they keep him, you know, every chance to just keep getting better. He's a physical load. He can do some things on the blocks. He's a defensive presence, solid rebounder, maybe some room to get better there. Not much in the way of ball skills, but that's okay. There's room in the college game for guys with his particular set of attributes.
Yeah, and then move to the bench. Starting with reserves, Joshua Olajoseph, 6'7", 7.8 points a game, 2.2 rebounds a game, 61, 41, and 74. And he strikes me as a guy who is a little streaky too, like Mitchell, but maybe I'm misremembering.
Well, he was off to a... Before MSU saw him the first time, he was up... I think he was over 50% from three. So he's come back to earth a little bit. He's also moved out of the starting lineup. Earlier this season, he was starting and putting up better numbers than this. His role has changed as they've decided to go with the Twin Towers look, where Garcia is playing the four and Payne is starting. That was not how they were playing early on, and I think it's been a good move for Minnesota. But Olajoseph is still, he hasn't hurt Michigan State very much, as I recall, in either of these two games, but certainly a guy who's capable of making some shots.
And then Braden Carrington, 6'4", 5.1 points a game, 3.4 rebounds a game on 36, 24, and 77 shooting.
Yeah, and I think he hit threes against Michigan State in both games, which was irritating.
Super frustrating, yes.
Yeah. Obviously not a great shooter, but they need someone to give them a little bit of relief at those guard spots, and he's it. So he's in kind of the Trey Holloman role for this team. Not the same kind of player, but he's in that role as the one real guard who sees time.
And then Parker Fox, who has really come on late. He's the guy who we've talked about before, who's injured for multiple years in a row and still managed to come back and play. He's 6'8" senior, 4.7 points a game, 3.1 rebounds a game, shooting 67, 0, and 51. And he's just a guy who really hustles, and he can make plays.
Yeah. Plays very hard. You know, big victory just being out on the floor, as we've said about him previously, but he's hurt Michigan State. I remember being particularly irritated, and I think it was in the game at Minneapolis where he just went right by Malik Hall, just took him off the dribble and just dusted him.
Right.
And that should never happen with a guy who's missed back-to-back seasons due to lower body injuries, but it did. So let's hope we don't see a replay of that.
Yeah. And then finally, Isaiah Innan, 6'9" wing, 3.4 points a game, 1.9 rebounds a game on 44, 36, and 50 shooting.
Yeah, not playing huge minutes, but, you know, gives him some length out there, and as the numbers belie, an ability to occasionally hit a deep shot.
Yeah.
That's his role.
All right, so a pretty clear player Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter would be Dawson Garcia.
Yeah.
So then right now it's 6.5 to 6.5 for the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. The player that Michigan State cleans glass the best. If you need your glass cleaned, call the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you're in the Grand Rapids area, they can get the job done quickly. They can wash your house. They can wash your business. They can wash the windows, the inside, the outside, the screens, whatever needs to be done. They will do a fantastic job, meticulous. I highly recommend them. They did our family's house, and I mean, they were just, I can't say enough about them. They even gave me a quick hint, a tip for fixing my valances that were sitting over my windows that had been broken forever. And a guy said, hey, just use some Velcro. I've done it with mine. I thought, oh, it worked great. Like, this thing's been sitting on my floor for like 2 years. They're just broken. You know, I never bothered fixing it. Anyway, really great guys. So contact them at Squeegee Squad at Grand Rapids. You can find that at our support page, of course, at thefinalfourisnotontheschedule.com/support. 15% off if you mention Rebound for your estimate. So I get to pick first. I'm going to go with Malik Hall. Just get rid of the drama.
I'll go with Carson Cooper.
Yep. They tied last game, so I think that's probably a good way to, way to go. And yeah, I think the second leading rebounder for the team is truly a crapshoot. It could be absolutely anyone. Although I feel confident it will not be Mati Sissoko because his minutes have dwindled to almost nothing at this point. All right, so then let's go to the five keys to the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. Again, Nudge Printing, we wear it all the time in our family. They're fantastic garments, high quality, screen printed, great vintage stuff for Michigan State, any sort of logo you want. Also have all kinds of wall decals. Just go to nudgeprinting.com. I mean, do yourself a favor. If you need any Spartan stuff or maybe another school in the state of Michigan, check it out. They got a ton of stuff there. Great prices, great product, great shipping. They do it all. And they're the ones who provide our gifts for all the winners of our contests. And so you can find that at nudgeprinting.com, 20% off if you type in Final Four at the coupon code at checkout. So the first key to the game is playing fast. And I think you've mentioned this before, Rod.
Yeah. look, it's pretty simple here. This team, and you really got, not that I wanted it to happen, but boy, that Indiana game just provided the perfect illustrations of what happens when Michigan State plays fast and what happens when they don't. And once again, just in case anybody missed it, I'm not talking about just or even primarily transition play. Yeah, you want to get into transition for sure. But in the half court, Michigan State becomes very easy to guard when it's dribble-itis for 15, 20 seconds of the shot clock, and then people start to move. When things are going well, you see men moving and you see the ball moving, and good things tend to happen. So Michigan State needs to play with pace, with purpose, with urgency when they have the ball.
I feel like, you know, sometimes when they run that weave, and I don't know if they just decide to call it, the coaching staff calls it because they just become too stagnant. They start, you know, that seems like an effective way to kind of get people moving again. I don't know if you agree with that, or I mean, you're wasting 10 seconds going back and forth a little bit, but people are starting moving around and stuff.
That's an old one that goes back to the Judd days. They've been doing that. Michigan State's been doing that for probably about as long as I've been watching Michigan State basketball, which is a long time. It does. It's something that Izzo took from Judd because Judd used to do it. You know, you're right. It's a way to maybe generate some movement. It's also sometimes, although it's not always easy to do, but sometimes you can get switches by virtue of doing that. But I'm not calling for a steady diet of that. I think it's really, I just want to see urgency in terms of getting into the sets and moving. It's just too much just guys standing and then the ball standing and sticking, because what you end up with when you don't have that kind of movement is you end up with guys largely in one-on-one situations, and that's not to this team's strength. It's not to many teams' strength. Illinois can play that way. You know, they've got a team that's built really to try to do that, to get isolations and exploit mismatches. But Michigan State is not, even when they get a switch, this is not a team that I've felt at any time this year was just great at exploiting mismatches. You know, Cassius Winston feasted on that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. This team, even a player like Tyson Walker, who's clearly their best offensive player, I feel his success rate in truly exploiting mismatches is not as high as you'd like it to be. And he's the best they've got.
Yeah, I was gonna say, maybe it's better than everyone else, but it's not like
it is.
Great. Yeah,
it is, but it's that doesn't make it great.
Well, you're kind of irritating me. You need to give me a quick fix, and you're not giving me a quick fix. So, number two key of the game is defensive rebounding. But we mentioned this a few times.
Well,
this is a bad rebounding team in general. I mean, a team that you should be able to get some stuff done.
But so is Indiana. and when you look at it, they do present, they're even bigger than Indiana.
Yeah, they scare me more than Indiana.
Well, actually, I would say that. They're not quite. But it's close.
Or Renault, yeah.
It's close. And it worries me, frankly, that Michigan State may end up in a situation where two guys really end up doing enough damage that it makes a difference. So we've got to see a return to what they did against Purdue and against Northwestern, where it's team rebounding, gang rebounding, all five guys are involved. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah. All right, third key of the game is winning the turnover battle, which you would expect with Minnesota having trouble hanging onto the ball that Michigan State should win, but squeeze a couple extra possessions out of it by getting this.
Yeah, and specifically, you know, what would be nice to see is some live ball turnovers that Michigan State can then convert into transition opportunities. And, you know, they did some of that against Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not enough, but they did some of it.
12
they
steals.
And they did a lot of it in the game at Breslin against these guys, as I recall. Now, that was, again, without Hawkins. Remains to be seen how many opportunities they get in this one. But, yeah, it's an area where there's a distinct advantage for Michigan State. They need to have that come to fruition.
And the fourth key of the game is hitting some threes. Boy, especially Akins.
Yeah, and I say it because Minnesota, as we mentioned, it's this paradox. They do a very good job, actually, at limiting attempts. But when teams do get shots off, they convert at a very high rate. So Michigan State needs to make that equation work as well as it possibly can for them, which probably means that they need to be hitting a high percentage.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be in that probably 40%-ish range as a team to be able to get enough scoring from three to feel good about their chances of winning this one, you know? So we need to see Michigan State, you know, back in that realm. I mean, they were middling, slightly less than middling against Indiana. They were god-awful against Northwestern. They were fantastic against Purdue.
Yeah.
So it's been inconsistency. We need to get back to the fantastic realm.
Inconsistency. That sounds familiar. The fifth and final key to the game is maybe the most obvious of them is overcoming the home court. Not technically a home court for Minnesota. They're not playing Williams Arena, but they are playing just down the road from campus. So definitely they're going to be all the Gopher fans that can make it at Thursday afternoon. They'll be there.
Yeah. I mentioned this in briefly when we did our tournament preview that I'm going to guess that Michigan State gets a little bit of a break here. Because this is a Thursday game, so that means Thursday at noon.
It's 11 Central.
Right. That Minnesota won't have quite the kind of turnout that they would have if that game was at, say, 8 Central.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much of a difference it'll make, but it might be something. It might not be quite as raucous a crowd. And again, as I mentioned, even watching them at Williams Arena, I don't get the sense that even though I think they've had a very good year relative to expectations, really good, I don't get the sense that there's a real Minnesota basketball fever.
The fans aren't back yet. No, I agree.
Yeah,
the fans
not fully. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if this was a game in Indianapolis and you're facing Purdue or Indiana, you know, you'd be up against it. But it's not that kind of scenario. Nevertheless, they're going to have more support than anybody else. And so for Michigan State, it's going to feel more like a road game than a typical Big Ten tournament game feels, you know?
Yeah.
And so they have to find a way to fight through that.
Yeah. So what would your expectation be at the five for starting? Do you think Booker starts again like he did at Indiana, or do you think it, they juggle things up again? What's your guess?
That's a good question. You know, it's a good question because I don't think Payne is great. I think you could get some early shot opportunities if Payne is guarding him. And maybe they would gamble and have Payne try to play Malik and put Garcia on Booker, mm-hmm. which would give them a better chance. But I don't know. I just feel like that position has just been it's been so inconsistent that it's been consistently not great, but inconsistent in terms of who is the best option on a game to game basis.
Yeah, I agree. It changes night to night.
I will say this. I don't think Booker really did anything against Indiana as opposed to some other games recently where you could say, yeah, he did enough where you should give him another shot as a starter. But I could see them trying it again.
Yeah.
I would guess it would be either he or Cooper. And I'd probably lean toward Booker, but just barely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the listener question of the show, brought to you by my foster son. So he is a certified mechanic, and he works at an auto shop here in town in Grand Rapids. So if you're in the Grand Rapids area and you're interested in getting your brakes done, he is doing brakes on the side, which is his shop actually encourages to get their mechanics extra experience. So anyway, so $75 an axle plus parts. If you're interested, you can send me an email, eric@tffinots.com. And also, if you have a question you'd like answered in the show, send it along as a text or voice memo to me at eric@tffinots.com. Today's question is from Andrew Gardner, who asks, kind of back to the five spot, with 50 points from the guards today, and he wrote this yesterday, and basically nothing from the centers, is it still true that we would not have benefited from a center transfer? So I will start by answering this, and then you can follow up here. So I think there's a few things at play. One is I don't think that the center position turned out the way that Michigan State thought. I think they thought they're going to get Mahdi would be not regress like he has. I think they thought Cooper would progress a little bit. Certainly couldn't have predicted the Kohler injury. And so I think that has limited the options there at the five as well. And so I think it was and Booker was just clearly not ready. I don't think they thought he was ready to probably play the five. And I think they probably expect him to play backup four more. So I think they probably would have, if Izzo had to go back in time, I think he probably would have tried to get a senior or grad center to fill that spot. I'm just guessing, because I think it's hindered them. I don't know how many different more wins they'd have with a better center, but probably a couple maybe, but, I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
What are my thoughts? It is, you have to start by understanding that this is a classic example of looking backward.
The retroscope?
Retrospective, yeah. Retroactive thinking.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. At the end of last March, so roughly a year ago, was there anybody at that point who was screaming for another five man? I would submit no. And the reason was you had Jackson Kohler did not close the season particularly strongly, but he had shown potential. You had Carson Cooper, who did close the season very strongly, had a very good NCAA tournament. And Mahdi Sissoko played largely winning basketball last year. People don't want to hear that, but he did. The biggest difference to me, if I look at it, is last year, Michigan State, and it's why I have these problems with this idea that, well, the centers aren't making it easy on the guards, as if this is an excuse for the year A.J. Hogard and Jaden Akins have had. It's not. They played with the same guys last year and had more success. So I find that very easy to dismiss. But I think Carson Cooper and Mahdi Sissoko in particular were better defensively last year They were better rebounders last year, and they fit into the offense. Even if they weren't scoring a ton, they did things that helped the offense flow better than they have this year.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we're talking about, if you're serious about this, is you got to go back 2 years.
Yes.
Because there's no way, and I said, just to finish the thought, I guess I was just on before we moved to 2 years ago. So what you had is you had two guys coming off their freshman year where they both shown enough potential where I think almost anybody would have said, yeah, you know, these are guys who can grow. And Tom Izzo wasn't going to cut bait with someone after a freshman year anyway. That's not his MO.
Right.
Okay. And then you had Mati Sissoko, who was coming off a junior year where it was reasonable to think, well, he could get a little better from here. And if he got a little better from last year's level, they'd be fine.
And that was his first year starting, too.
Right. They would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen. And so it's fair to criticize Michigan State staff on that basis as to why didn't that development happen with those players. Also, some of the criticism, frankly, has to go to the players. It's a two-way street.
Sure.
People, and a lot of people who don't really understand how things work, think that these guys spend the off season huddled in the practice gym with Tom Izzo screaming at them for 40 hours a week. Doesn't work that way. So a lot of development work is on the individual. It's on the player, what they choose to do for themselves. This is something that I remember I knew somebody who had, it was a poster on the Spartan Mag board who had connections with a player who played for John Beilein's Michigan teams, one of those teams. And this guy knew the player because he'd had involvement with him in AAU. And the player, and I know who it was, I'm not going to identify him, but the player was irritated a little bit by this notion that, oh, John Beilein just works magic developing these players. Because in his mind, in his experience, the vast majority of that was stuff that he did himself.
Right.
And that's true. For the most part, because of the restrictions that coaches have in terms of the number of hours, and it's gotten better since that, actually, but it's still not a ton. The restrictions on the amount of time you could spend with your guys in the off season is real. And so usually the biggest thing a coach can do is provide a structure, provide guidance to what happens, but the actual doing of the work is largely on the players. So that's why I say, there's also some responsibility here to be shared by the players, Michigan State, for that. You know, it's not just the coaches. That's part of it. You want to come at them for that? Fine. I've got no argument. But it's also on the players. But again, given the situation a year ago, nobody was clamoring for Michigan State to cut one of these guys loose and go on the portal and grab somebody. That just wasn't a narrative, and it shouldn't have been. Because Michigan State had had a pretty decent year. If they'd been able to play the game against Minnesota that was canceled, they would have tied for second in the regular season. And then they went further than any other Big Ten team in the tournament. They went to the Sweet 16. And with so many guys coming back, we know where they were ranked, blah, blah, blah. So nobody was calling for it this year. So you really ought to go back 2 years.
Yeah.
Mati Sissoko was still a young player at that point. He was just coming off his sophomore year. Were they going to cut bait with him? Probably not. Jackson Kohler had been recruited, had done some good things in high school and AAU, was a top 100 recruit. Obviously, they were already all in on him. So what it really comes down to is the decision to offer Carson Cooper versus going out and getting somebody in the portal. And then you've got to think, that guy would have had to have been a 2-year solution and not a 1-year guy for it to matter this season, right?
Yeah, unless, because even if you redshirt, I mean, you still could have offered Cooper, I suppose, and redshirted him like the initial plan was.
Marvel's maybe still going to be around.
I don't know.
But they weren't going to do that.
Yeah.
They weren't going to do that. It really does. The only way to properly understand it is an either or. And I think the fact that they went and got Cooper when they did that summer tells you something. It tells you that, and again, you can criticize him if you want, but this is, I think, a pretty accurate recitation of the rationale. They didn't like what was out there in the portal at the five.
Yeah.
There have been, I would say that there have been guys who, at least in terms of production, have been better this year than last year at that position. You know, we've got a few of them in the Big Ten who have done, you know, fairly well. Ware obviously has come on lately and been huge for Indiana. The kid at Iowa, the kid Freeman, at Nebraska. Yeah. There have been some guys who have fared pretty well this year. I'm not sure that all of those guys would have been good fits for Tom Izzo. But, you know, again, you can debate that, but I know what he looks for. And if you don't have the ability to extend out on the floor defensively and you can't run the floor particularly well, he's probably not going to be interested, especially a guy who's a short-termer. You know, if it's Derek Nix, okay, he's got some issues there, but Izzo's also got 4 years to work with him. You're not going to have that with a portal guy most of the time.
Yeah.
So that's where you have to go. If we're being serious here, because I don't take seriously that we should have gotten somebody last offseason. I don't take that seriously. Nobody thought it was a sufficient issue. Because, again, the guy, I'll go to my mantra, the guards were supposed to be elite. They have not been.
Yeah.
That is the real crux of the problem. The five is a problem, but compared to the impact of the guard play, it's at the margins, in my opinion. It did not prevent them from being good. If the guards had been up to snuff and the centers played the way they've played this year, maybe it prevents Michigan State from being a top five team. I can buy that, but it's not why they're where they are.
Yeah.
It's not. But in any event, to solve it, you really got to go back 2 years. So that's where it comes is, can you find somebody who's a two-year answer at that spot, or I guess you could say a one-year answer and then they go back into the portal this offseason. Maybe they could have done that too.
Yeah.
But it's that versus Carson Cooper. And I still think there's a good Big Ten center in Carson Cooper. He's not done, I don't believe. You know? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, Tom Izzo has told you what he wants to do. And yeah, people can moan about it, say, well, he gambled and lost. And okay, maybe he did. But he's also said pretty clearly, this is the program he wants to run. So are we going to see a change? I've already gone on record. I don't think Monty's coming back. I think they'll probably add, depending upon what they want to do with Booker, I could see adding a four or a five, but I think they're going to add a post player in the portal this offseason.
Yeah, I think so.
And maybe depending upon what might happen with the rest of the roster, maybe it's more than one, but guys would have to leave for that to happen. Younger players would have to opt to leave. But that's just, you know, that's just not what Tom Izzo wanted to do. Now you can fairly say it's bit them. Okay. I think to some degree that's true. But once again, is it the, and even the Indiana game, I see all this stuff about you got destroyed by their fours and fives. That's evidence that this was the root of the problem. No. It was that the guards didn't play the way they're supposed to play. And yes, that includes Tyson Walker's 30 points. They went in the tank and dribble-itis their way right out of that game.
Yeah.
Could they have won that game with the center play they got if the offense was playing with the kind of pace they should? Absolutely. Absolutely. So I find the obsession. Haven't we had we've had a couple weeks in a row. Doesn't anybody get tired of it?
I don't know. They keep asking questions about it, but maybe we'll get a different question.
Just tired of it. It's such simpleton stuff. It really is. And I know people don't want to hear that, but sorry, I'm going to call it the way I see it. It really is. Something can be true and yet not incredibly significant in terms of determining why a macro occurrence has happened. The macro occurrence in this case being Michigan State being a very disappointing team.
Yeah.
No one argues. I'm not here to try and tell people, oh, the play at the five spot's been just fine. But the obsession with it is just, I don't know what you're watching. You're not watching the same team I am. You're not watching the same games I am if that's what you think the biggest issue is. It's just not. You know, here's a better question that I never, ever, 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 ever hear anybody ask. Should they have encouraged Jaden Akins to leave and gone out and replaced him with somebody else? Now, that sounds incredibly stupid, right? Because this time last year, nobody on God's green earth would have done that.
Right.
But you know what? If we're going to play the retrospective game, could Michigan State have probably found a wing who would have been more productive than Jaden Akins? Yes. Should they have done the same thing with A.J. Hogard? Sure, retroactively, you can argue that. And those two things would have made a hell of a lot more difference than this stuff we're talking about at the five.
Yeah, it's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that, but certainly.
Nobody ever does. Nobody ever does.
I don't generally look to replace people all the time, but I'm not thinking of that.
No,
but that's.
I'm not saying they should have.
I know you're not.
But that's the point.
Well,
that's
it's funny.
The point.
In the social media world or whatever, the posters, you know, the bulletin boards and stuff. I think ideas circulate. They sort of just grow, get a life of their own, and sort of became, if only Booker's playing, and then he started playing, like, well, okay, they're not any better. They're still having the same problems. Well,
that's the other thing. And I mean, I don't want to bag on Book because I think he has shown growth.
Oh, for sure.
And real potential. But yeah, that was supposed to solve everything. Where'd that go?
Yeah.
The last two games, it hasn't gone anywhere.
Right.
You know? They've struggled mightily on offense with him playing. Now, of course, the argument, well, he only played 7 minutes. He should have played 17. All right. I didn't see anything in the 7 minutes in Bloomington that told me that it was an extra 10 was going to be likely to produce a hell of a lot more than we saw in the 7 he did get.
He did get scored on and got out-rebounded while he's out there.
Yeah.
And that's I think he's going to be a different player next year with a little bit more weight on him and some strength and stuff.
Too.
And so I'm very excited for his future.
Same here. But, you know, again, people, what it all stems from is the desire for fault and the desire for control. If the coach would just play this other guy, we see this across sport. I mean, it's the backup quarterback fallacy in football, right?
Caden Hauser, he's the answer.
Yeah, just play Caden Hauser. Everything will turn around. Well, how'd that go? You know, and that's much, 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 much more commonly what happens. I'm not saying coaches are infallible. I'm not saying Tom Izzo's infallible. But sometimes it's true that the way you thought a team would be, you had good reason to believe, and then it didn't turn out that way. And that can be for a variety of reasons. I think clearly what's been demonstrated is key players did not get better enough over this offseason. I think that's been borne out. Now, why that happened, there's no real way, unless you're around them all the time, to know what was their offseason routine, you know. But as I keep saying, you go back to a year ago, every Michigan State fan out there felt great about how this team shaped up.
Yep.
And so did Tom Izzo. And that didn't happen. So you want to hold them accountable for that. Okay, fair enough. I think in retrospect, yeah, it didn't. But again, if it's me, where I'm going when we're playing the looking backward game is, well, you got to get a better wing than Jaden Akins in here. And you got to get a better point guard than A.J. Hogard in here. Because they haven't been good enough. And that's mattered a hell of a lot more than this stuff at the five.
Yeah.
Because of the way the team's oriented, you also have to understand that too. Michigan State has always going back to Judd, even before Judd, if you look at the guys, the majority of the guys who were elite players, even before that, Michigan State has been a guard program. You think about the great teams, man, and you are usually thinking about guards. You know, they've had some great big men, but you're usually thinking about guards.
Yeah.
And when the guards aren't up to snuff, that's the problem. That's the problem writ large for the team. And for this team in particular, because of the way they were oriented, you knew, and this is, you know, this is the other thing too, Izzo got, and I'm sorry I'm ranting about this, but read me this question, I'm going to go, and I'm going to let you know what I think. You know, there was this line that Izzo used that had some dopes in a tizzy on social media about Izzo saying, well, you know, we knew that our centers weren't going to be great. And that was the word he used. Not good, great. I think he thought they'd be good. But what he also meant by that, in my opinion at least, is that they knew, and the plan never was, that they were going to get 15 points a game out of one of the centers, that somebody was going to emerge and become, you know, a Nick Ward overnight in the low post. They weren't planning on that. That wasn't part of the plan. The plan was those guys would be mostly what they were last year, but maybe a notch better. So primarily their value being in the way they defended and the way they rebounded and then giving them occasional scoring on putbacks in transition off pick and roll. That's what they anticipated. The reason they thought they were going to be good was because of the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys hadn't been good enough consistently enough.
Yep.
But, you know, but that gets misread and, you know.
Sure.
Off to the races we go with bad takes.
Everybody looks for a fix, especially when you have high expectations, then you're really extra frustrated by the season just because it started so high for everybody. And I would point out just too that if I recall, most of the banter before the season started was why didn't they go in and get a Portal 4 someone, because they no one trusted Malik Hall.
Izzo mentioned that in that same press conference. In fact, in that same exact sequence, that answer I was talking about to a question, he mentioned that. He said, they never expected the centers to be great, but what was implicit in that is they thought they'd be a little better than they were last year, which would be good enough if your guards were as good as you thought they were going to be. And then he mentioned there were questions about the four, but they believed in him. And he, I think his exact line was, that kid played his tail off this year. Yeah. And he has.
He has. He's been very, very good.
But you're right. You're right. That was the one thing that you could look at and say, well, if you're going to add somebody, I remember saying that last year before all the decisions came in, that I thought if they were going to add anybody, it would be kind of a role player four type. And they didn't have to do that because Malik came back. And he's had a great year. He's, you know, he and Tyson are the two guys that I think can walk pretty tall.
Yeah.
After this campaign is over, whenever it ends. But, yeah, it's just, it's frustrating, and I get that, but, you know, the desire to reinvent history, I think, is what bothers me about it. It's, if you want to argue that they should have gone a different direction 2 years ago and not added Carson Cooper, okay, there's a defensible argument there. I'll grant that. But that's also not the way Tom Izzo wants to build.
Yeah.
Tom Izzo likes the idea of a young player that he can develop over 4 years.
Yeah, because this system is not one you can just drop people in usually and just be find them successful right
away. Nobody expected Carson Cooper was going to be.
No.
I would say in some ways Carson Cooper is still more or less on track.
I think so.
What you might have thought he would have been. The only difference is he didn't take a red shirt.
Right.
You know?
All right, we'll leave it there. I got to get on a plane, so I'll see everybody in the Twin Cities, and hopefully we'll see a couple games from Michigan State. We'll see how it works out. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.